Coming up on All About Android, it's me, Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our guest, Joshua Vergara. We talk about CES going all digital for 2021, Qualcomm's quick charge spec, the new one that's crazy fast. We talk about our reviews of the Nord, the OnePlus Nord, and the LG Velvet gets an unboxing by Flo that you won't want to miss next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Raycon. Raycon's wireless earbuds are perfect for conference calls, video calls, music, or binging podcasts. Now is the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Go to buyraycon.com/android and get 15% off your order today. And by IT Pro TV. Get the most up-to-date IT professional training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/allaboutandroid for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription and use code AAA30 at checkout. Hello, welcome to All About Android, episode 483, recorded on Tuesday, July 28th, 2020, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards, coming to you from a 14-year-old girl's bedroom. I'm staying at my sister's. I'm in my niece's bedroom, and this is the only room in the house that was available to record from. So if you're watching the video show, you can see the LED lights. You can't see on camera, but the soccer trophies, so there you go. Welcome to the show.
The context helps. And also,
I'm Florence Ion, and this is my room, and the toys surrounding me are actually mine and not my daughter's.
Seemingly a 14-year-old girl's bedroom, but it's actually Flo's.
Forever a 14-year-old girl in my heart. I'm even wearing a Sailor Moon shirt today, so.
See, there you go. There you go. It works. Works for me.
I'm a little embarrassed to welcome one of our favorite guests to the 14-year-old girl's bedroom, but here it is. So.
Welcome to that bedroom, Joshua Vergara, youtube.com/Joshua Vergara.
In like a really dramatic, beautiful, you just have a very beautiful thumbnail compared to, I mean, it's just very sultry. It's very like, it's like you're in a lounge.
Your shot is crystal clear, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Trying to use my DSLR here, and just to call Ron up for a second. I was gonna do a "Oh hey, didn't see you there" gag, and then he said the 14-year-old girl thing. I was just like,
you did a gag.
It was strategic. It was strategic. You know, here I am with my Logitech, whatever HD, whatever the little, you know, the one that everybody uses, and you've got a DSLR, and you look like it's like a movie compared to my standard def TV.
Well, the thing is, it's bedroom like office status, obviously, for pretty much everyone in the world. And you know, I spent a lot of the first 2 months of quarantine figuring out how to make this battle station. So I even have my overhead right here.
Oh, wow.
I have this whole setup.
He touched a button.
Did he have actual live switching going on with you? Didn't have to unplug a camera and plug it back in?
I got this all set up because I was thinking I'm gonna do a weekly live show every Tuesday, T Tuesdays or something like that. Have not done one since. That's been months. I haven't done one show yet.
Who has the time when you're devastated all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. We have so much time in quarantine, and I feel like many of us are just not using it.
Well, no, yeah. Well, you know, energy only comes so much in surplus.
Indeed. I mean, I feel like we've got so much time in quarantine, at least in my experience. It's all eaten up by everything, by life, that even if I wanted to do something like what you're talking about, or even just make music, I would love to be making music. I would love to be able to look back on this quarantine and be like, wow, I was stuck in our house for a year. I had all this time to write new material. I haven't picked up a guitar, but maybe a handful
of times. But you're not Taylor Swift. Aww. Taylor Swift has people to make sheds for you, Jason. Instead, you're making the sheds because it's real life,
that's
man.
That's true. I'm enjoying making the sheds, though. It was fun to make that shed. Totally unrelated, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but that new album is actually good.
I know. I've been listening to a lot of the not usually a Swiftie, people talking about it, and I'm so curious. I'm really trying to resist it, but I'm so curious to like take the journey.
Yeah, I'm so and outside I'm sure of this.
It's being played in your house. Yeah,
no, you and me, Joshua. I'm out there.
See, but I will
realize,
say
I realize that. That's why I'm just throwing that out there.
But Flo will very much appreciate this, and she saw it on Twitter. Like, this quarantine has led me to not only K dramas, but I'm army now. I'm a fan of BTS now, so I'm very much into it.
You know, I'm hoping I can get tickets when eventually we will open up the world again, and then because they were supposed to do a world tour this year, but like I had the baby and the, you know, healthcare and all these things cost money. But I feel like by the time we open the world again, I'll be able to have money to go continue living my preteen fantasies as a mid 30s woman who, well, I love myself. This is how I show self-care. So, yes.
There you go. It'll happen someday, sometime down the line, we'll be able to return to that life.
Honestly, some of those songs just lift your spirits. It really does. You know, I'll attest to it myself.
After the show, you can tell me who your favorite is. But anyway.
This show is all about Android, not all about K-pop or Taylor Swift. So, why don't we jump right into the news, Burke? Let's do it.
Say goodbye to this year's Conflu. It's Android news, all digital.
Bittersweet. It's true, because every year you go to I feel like the word flu has different meaning now, suddenly, I'm realizing. But every year you go to CES, and that would be the thing that everybody would complain about, right? Like, oh, I got back from CES and I'm so sick. I had a lot of fun, or I didn't have a lot of fun, but they're almost guaranteed always to come back sick. Not with the coronavirus, and definitely not with the coronavirus in 2021, because the Consumer Electronics Show has officially been announced to be a fully virtual show for 2021. It runs January 6th through 9th. It's going to include keynotes, product showcases, networking opportunities, but all digital, all online. No packing the halls in Vegas, which, let's be real, it's a good decision. That's how I feel.
Well, and also, I think this is what is also interesting, that this is on the heels of, and I think CES is more, it's a sooner date and it's more akin to us, but we cover all things Google. But I saw today Google shared that they're extending the work from home until summer 21.
That's true.
Right.
None of these are good news. I mean, It's sobering news. I mean, we all agree it's probably for the best, and better safe than sorry. And I actually saw somebody, one of my friends in my Facebook feed was talking, and I guess somebody tweeted it or whatever, but saying, if you're curious how this whole coronavirus thing is actually going, look at the tech companies and look at the decisions that are going to be made. And if Google's not, you know, saying not till summer 21, you know, so I mean, CES. I'm not sure if we talked about it on the show, but I read a great article that when this all started back in like March or April that identified CES as one of the possible starting points for this in the US, because so many people came from China, and they tracked one dude who went to CES and then went to the Bay Area and then went to Seattle, and like you just see how it could all go. So it makes sense that they would do this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going anyway, so. It's fine.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we haven't been going for the last couple of years, or at least I haven't. So I don't think we had any plans of going to Vegas. I mean, just the idea of going to Vegas now, let alone like, eight months from now, when I think of CES, I just think of the most packed of packed things that I ever really do in my life with any sort of regularity.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
But for a freelancer like myself, CES was a very kind of important part of the job because of the things that I budget for during the year. I only budget for a very, very small number of conferences compared to what I did when I was fully employed, just to say. So I was actually looking forward to going back in 2021 after the whole baby thing. But then that was... you know, that was pre-COVID. That was pre all this, just because I was really looking forward to being in a spot where everybody would be to just kind of like, you know, connect, network, exchange ideas, that sort of thing. So We're not going to get that without a CES. It's just,
or even just friendships, honestly. Like, that's going to be a thing that I know a lot of us are going to miss, is being able to hang out with one another. And just on a personal standpoint, I feel like the only person in all of these conversations that actually likes Las Vegas.
I love Las Vegas, but I'm already bummed that I can't go. But
it depends on the context. I love and hate. Well, I don't love Las Vegas, but I don't hate Las Vegas. I'm somewhere in the middle, and it depends on, like, I organized an event at one of the casinos and the hotels, and like that took years off my life. So like I transferred planes in Vegas like a year or a year and a half after the event I organized. It was the first time I was back. And as soon as the plane hit the runway, I started getting the shakes just by seeing the strip. And luckily I never left the airport, but it's like, so Vegas can either be great or take years off your life. So.
Fair. Yeah. The last couple of years, I've created like these little events for our friend group, and I call it family meal. And we just go to a restaurant in Las Vegas once most of the work is done, and we all just have a meal together. And I'm just a little bit disappointed that we won't be able to do that this time around. Other than that, just having to buy all of our own food and drink during the digital CES, that's a bummer.
Yeah, right. Are they gonna deliver hors d'oeuvres to our homes and give us samples of all the really bad tech at some of these events? These things that you're like, oh, wait a minute, somebody actually found like money to invest in this product? Well, they're on the show floor.
Like Ron said earlier, this is a really valid concern to kind of be concerned about what we're going to do with conferences and conventions going forward. I mean, even look at this year, like I personally really felt a void without Google I.O. It's been such an important part of my coverage, and just part of the beat is being in the trenches, so to speak. And like, what better way to do that than to be right there next to Google HQ with everybody? And so to not have that kind of, I don't know. And I keep seeing calls for all these virtual events, and I'm tempted, but it's just so... It's so much right now to try and like squeeze all of these things that were once really normal into just like a digital event. I honestly feel like we should be taking a bit of a break from everything.
But it's actually but Flo, that's actually a really great point, because, you know, while it's not tech, the most recent major nerd virtual event that happened Comic-Con. Was this past weekend. So San Diego Comic-Con happened, and you know, obviously we all know it was canceled and San Diego wasn't going to do it, and and so instead of it, they decided to have a Comic-Con at home. And their approach to it was they focused on their panel programming, right? So they didn't try to recreate the exhibitor floor or any of that stuff. But what they did was they had panelists submit videos that then were published to the Comic-Con YouTube page. And I don't know if you saw some of the articles that were coming out in the past couple of days, but you know, part of my day job is I work in comic book and entertainment industry, so this is very near and dear to my heart. And I was watching it over the weekend, and they actually published over 300 videos in the span between Thursday and Friday. And at best, the videos averaged about 10,000 views each. I saw some videos that still had three digits in views. And there was a bunch of analysis that came out that showed that chatter and discussion on social media about Comic-Con was down 94% year over year, which was just like, you can't recreate it. You can't take that event and move it online in the way that you're going to do it. I think that, you know, they overstepped their bounds. They really, it was too wide, and you can't. Yes, it's great to have these, you know, streaming options to watch it and all stuff like that. But people, you know, it's summer. They're doing stuff. They're out. I was in the pool this morning. You know, like, so it's, you know, it's tough to do a virtual event. So we'll see what they do. But.
Not to mention, people are, you know, in the case of something like this virtual event versus in person, you're there, you're focused. That's the thing that you're doing. You're doing virtual, you're expected to kind of do that thing too, but also all of these other things, you know, and it's just, it's hard to kind of keep up that pace and everything in a different environment.
Video always off. Right. So, it's the weirdest when you come into like a briefing or a meeting or something, and they're all like, "Josh, where's your camera? We want to see you." And I'm like, "I don't want you to see me right now. What are you talking about?"
it is a really invasive thing to just kind of have like a camera on to a a person who is usually a colleague, because at least when you're in those spaces, you're in a public, like, shared space versus this is my room. Like, I mean, I show it to you guys on the show every Tuesday, but it's a bit of a different thing to do that here in this space with what we're doing right now versus, hi, I'm Florence Ion, journalist, and I'm interested in learning more about your company and your product. It's, you know, it's a psychological thing.
Totally. I mean, the good news is everybody's in the same position, so everybody kind of understands, but it is weird. But it is weird, and it's taken some time to get adjusted to that. I'll be curious to see how engaging and how, I don't know, how much of a copy of the real CES, the digital version, will be. Obviously, it's going to be nothing near it, but when you're talking about networking opportunities and everything, how are they going to actually offer an experience that even comes close to what you get when you're in Vegas? And no one really knows, but not surprised at all that they announced that.
And let's be
honest. Ron, you got the next one.
Oh, sorry.
Flo, be honest first.
I was just going to say, let's be honest, we all breathe a slight sigh of relief that we get a bit of a break from. Yeah,
well, I got to say, I mean, it wasn't COVID related, but the first time I didn't have to go to CES, I was like, whew, that's fantastic. And I've never been back since. So anyway, so moving on to the next story, this is probably near and dear to all of our hearts, but our good friends over at Qualcomm announced Quick Charge 5. It's a new fast charge spec. And they are claiming it is the world's fastest commercial charging solution. And I hope everyone's sitting down, and I know you are. Full charge in 15 minutes, 50% charge in 5 minutes. And this is all based on a 4,500 milliamp battery. And I know I mispronounce that every time. I don't know how to say it. With two cells receiving 50 watts each. Wireless quick charge is also supported, and they are targeting commercial devices starting in Q3 2020, which is around the corner, everybody. So you could have 50% of your phone charged in just 5 minutes, all of it within 15 minutes. That's amazing. When you think about long it used to take, I used to plug in my phone overnight to recharge the battery, and now you can do it in 15 minutes. That's crazy. So
I don't know. What about longevity? What about a longevity of these batteries? Because isn't it always like the flip side of this? People who are naysayers about fast charge are like, yeah, but your battery won't, you know, you won't get as much battery life long term out of a battery that's being charged so rapidly. I wonder how something like this would affect the longevity of a device. If it's in a device and now suddenly your device depletes, you know, the battery capacity depletes earlier than we're normally used to. Are we keeping a device for 1.5 years and then suddenly like the battery is so destroyed? Like, I don't know. I'm just making a guess, but I wonder what that'll play out to be.
I'll tell you what.
That's the whole thing where there's only so many charges a battery can take, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, don't you deplete after doing it however many thousand, 100 times or whatever it is? Like, and it hurts the battery, basically. That's why you shouldn't charge to 100% all the time.
Yeah, I hear advice on both sides, why you should or why you shouldn't, you know, charge up to 80%. You know, even some of the phones, I can't remember the phone that came out recently, was it one of the OnePlus phones, actually, that charges up to 80% and then guesses when you're going to wake up. I think it is. It's the OnePlus 8 Pro, if I remember correctly. Guesses when, over time, when you're going to wake up, and then it charges up to 100 only, like, you know, the last hour before it expects you're going to be taking your phone off the charger to hopefully get longer longevity out of your battery. But can't balk at 0 to 50 in 5 minutes. I mean, this is crazy. You know,
that's steeping a cup of black tea right there. Like that's real easy. And am I going to be the only one who's like always watching the number just increase one by one by one? I'm going to love that. It's going to be really nice to look at.
Go. Skype. I was just gonna say that I still feel having a bigger battery is better, just because of my experience that I've been having with the OnePlus 8. The fact that I do not have to charge that thing until the actual end of the day, versus the life I've been living with the Pixels, how they were just kind of, you know, lacking juice or whatever, losing juice, you know, about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I feel like fast charging is great, but I would rather see something a little bit bigger, maybe, instead of faster. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think that under load, that's another place that we should be hopefully getting more information as to how it's mitigating some of the issues. Because if you got this thing plugged in 0 to 50 in 5 minutes while you're playing like Call of Duty Mobile and your phone's just heating up like crazy, like there's longevity issue. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I would worry about that just a little bit. Yeah, they're saying 10 degrees Celsius cooler is what Qualcomm is saying about this.
Okay. Well, the process.
But yeah, you're right. If you're doing a bunch of other stuff,
Also, Qualcomm makes the parts, and it's up to the manufacturer to actually put everything around it to make it so that it doesn't kill everything. You know,
right.
Qualcomm just made a fast charging technology. All the other parts are up to somebody else.
Yep.
True.
Yep.
Good point.
I'm excited to see.
Do we know what flagships we're thinking will come with this?
That picture looked like a Samsung in the slide. I'm just saying.
Oh, does it?
I think it does.
I feel like Samsung is the stock Android phone now just because of the way it's played out.
I think the next slide after that, where you see the bottom.
Q3 2020. Are we in Q3 right now? Are we about to be Q3?
Yeah, but it would probably include like at least the soonest would be Q4 phones that we're launching, I would assume. Mm.
Targeting commercial devices starting Q3. I feel like if this was like in the note, for example, this is what I'm trying to think of is like, would they announce this ahead of the note and the note be the launch for this? Yeah. And I feel like we'd know about that. Like there's been enough leaks about things in the Samsung world for this event coming up that we'd probably hear about that because this is a pretty big deal, you know, a big step up. So probably
big
not.
Deal, big
but
phone.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I'll tell you
what we do know about. I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying to do the transitions, and it's all like.
It's close enough. Just roll with it. Just roll with it. It's all good.
People, all right, this is what the Emmys are going to be like. Get used to it.
Yes, I know, right?
I know. I mean, look, if all the major networks are doing it, so can we. I have some emoji news for you, which is like a nice changeover from talking about batteries and hardware that can spontaneously combust. Android 11 will have 117 new emoji, which is super exciting. Of course, emojis have become a part of our vernacular, a part of our everyday language. It's how we write notes. It's how we write love letters. 62 characters, including 55 skin tone and gender variants. So that's how we get to the number of 117. Google redesigned some of the emoji to also look better in dark mode, which is nice because dark mode is where we all wanted to be all this time anyway. Also, emoji reactions are hitting messages, which will be awesome, fun, a little iMessage-y when you think about it. And of course, RCS will be required for that sort of thing. But on the flip side, with some of that Google redesign, we're getting a rehash of some old favorites, including the smiling turtle, which a lot of people were really, really kind of bummed about to see a more realistic turtle in the recent iterations of Android. But now we'll go back to that nice smiley turtle. He's just smiling at you. He's just happy to be a turtle and live in a shell. So,
aw,
it'll be nice.
The smiling turtle.
Yeah, the calm smiling turtle.
I think I'm sort of happy, I suppose, to get reactions in Android messages because I feel like there have been so many times where I send a message to someone on an iPhone and then I get the text readout smiled at and then my entire text message.
Yeah.
So I realize this isn't going to fix that.
Like, but what was the reaction? Was it a positive reaction? Was it a negative reaction? Like what between the spectrum of the two?
Yeah, well, they always, you know, it always like does a text description of what the emoji is. So like smiley face to and then, you know, the words from your text message. This
like,
isn't going to address
joy,
that. Like you're not going to suddenly get those from iPhones, but between Android devices on RCS chat, you will.
I just noticed there's a boba icon here. There's a
freaking
what? Boba.
Oh, my gosh. It's been around for so long.
There's a bubble teacup right there. And it
well, boba is a part of everyday life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take that presentation.
More emoji coming soon.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. And then we've got some hardware? We got some hardware to talk about. But before that, we're going to talk about a different kind of hardware, actually. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Raycon. If you're working at home or you're working on your fitness, you're taking care of yourself, you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to. You don't want, you know, your roommates, your neighbors, your significant other, your children. You're not listening to what they're listening to. You've got your earbuds in. You want to be focused on what you're listening to. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. And before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, because these things can get really expensive depending on where you're going, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Raycon earbuds started about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. They sound just as awesome as other top brands that you know. And they have the newest model, which is the Everyday E25 earbuds. They're the best ones yet. They've got 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, sound is really nice, and a compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Now, Raycon's wireless earbuds are super comfortable. They're perfect for, you know, for conference calls, of course, but also binge listening to your favorite podcasts all about Android. And that's really it, right? That's the only podcast that you binge listen to. I understand. Maybe a few others. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds, which these are them, right? By the way, they're nice and small, actually, and they fit into the ear really nicely. Raycon earbuds are both stylish. They're discreet. So they're just easy to wear and be proud of. You're not going to have the dangling wires, the stems that distract you during video calls. The company was actually co-founded by Ray J and celebrities. You know, Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, a whole bunch of celebrities involved here are obsessed with Raycons.
Now, the thing that I love about my Raycons, well, a couple of things. One, they're so light. They fit super comfortably. So that's nice, of course. But also, the first thing you hear when you pop them into your ear is a nice little, it's like a serenade. It's like, Raycon. I've heard some really annoying turning on noises in true wireless earbuds before. This one just kind of starts me on the right foot. I really like that about them.
So you can pick up a pair and see what the hype is all about. And you're gonna notice the sound quality difference. You're going to notice the fact that you've saved on cost compared to the other earbuds that you can find out there. And now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. You can get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/android. That's buyraycon.com/android. And you'll get 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/android. Check them out. Your ears will thank you. And we thank Raycon for their support of this show and the Twit Network. All right, that's a little bit of hardware, but we've got more. Oh, do we have more in hardware? Let's do it. So, the OnePlus Nord was the story of the week. Everybody flipped their lid yesterday, it sounds like. I posted my review of the OnePlus Nord yesterday afternoon on Hands on Tech. You can go to twit.tv/HOT to watch that. And let's see here. Well, Joshua, you have it as well, right? Have you posted a review of this? You've been spending some time with it. What do you think?
Well, okay, so I'll go ahead and cut over to it. So
yeah.
here's the phone. I have not done my full review on it yet. I usually do like an unboxing, first impressions, and then I move on to real-world camera test, which is what I released yesterday. And then I'll do my reviews are now called like top five complaints and takeaways, just like the five things in both categories that I feel like people should know about. So I kind of in a nutshell, I adore that this phone exists, which is different from me adoring the phone. I love that we're getting more choices. This phone obviously not coming to the US, at least not yet. Maybe a version of it at some point, who knows? But the one thing that I'll say right off the bat, and the reason why I keep like sort of twisting the phone around here, I'm not a fan of this color. I'm just not. I can't get past it.
Oh, I like the color.
This blue marble really just doesn't like really do it for me. Because if you look up on Google, if you look up the term Nordic blue, it's a different blue, and I feel like that blue would have been a better color for this. This is a little too, I don't know, a matted version of this would have been a little bit better, in my opinion. And there's a gray version. That one looks great. But yeah, overall, just there's a lot to like about what OnePlus has brought to the table here. And honestly, like, if you're looking for a general like bare minimum in terms of Android, I feel like we've kind of hit that mark. We have really good performance, even a high refresh rate screen, good specifications across the board. I mean, the 765G is nothing to slouch on. It's a great processor. I've had no problems for everyday tasks. Now, the cameras, I will cut back over. The cameras on this phone are good. It's more about the fact that you have different features with the cameras than the overall quality of the cameras themselves. So wide angle for the rear, wide angle on the front, that made me very happy. But yeah, that you have those lenses in the first place are, to me, the big story here. And also on those two cameras, I mean, I know I'm a vlogger of sorts, and this is really only like a thing that someone like me would be into, but those front cameras, both of them can do 4K. So if you're into social media or vlogging or anything like that, this phone does that when the OnePlus 8 Pro couldn't, which is an odd choice. Yeah. But yeah.
And the rear camera doesn't do 4K, right?
It does, but not at 60. I think that's the
difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I think overall, like, there's a lot to like about this phone, and I think this is going to be sort of the template for what we expect from mid-range phones moving forward. Yeah, I mean, it says more about the state of our market right now that we have parts that you could put into a phone and it's not going to cost over $800 and you can still get a good experience. I think that says more about like a good place we're at in smartphones right now than just the phone itself. It's just a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say to kind of do a quick summary of what my review kind of covers. I like the design. Like, I know it's a sparse design. In many ways, it's kind of a plain glass sandwich with a plastic chassis that actually I think they did a really good job of matching the chassis between this and what you get on the OnePlus 8. They're very similar. I was convinced it was aluminum until I realized it was actually plastic. So that's nice. You know, the flat display is great. I'm actually liking that a lot more than the curvy display that you get on the other ones. 90 hertz refresh in this price category is awesome. I think the big story for me on this device, and I said this on Twitter earlier, is how competent the Snapdragon 765G processor mm-hmm. actually is, which is, you know, probably to a certain degree why we're seeing so many phones, why we're seeing on a certain level, this resurgence of the mid-range being a really interesting category for this particular year. There's a number of reasons why that is, but if there wasn't a good processor to take up that space to power those phones, like the designs were nice, but still, when you use the phone, things slowed down, and you really kind of noticed the mid-range hooks because of that. Then we'd be talking about a different story. But this processor is fantastic. Like on day-to-day usage, I really noticed very little to differentiate between my usage of this device and my Pixel 4 XL. I couldn't really point my finger at it. Maybe the only way that I could is if I ran very particular games. And by the way, the 765G, the G stands for gaming. So this is a version of the 765 mm-hmm. that's made to be better for gaming. And I could run most of the games on the highest graphics quality yep. and not notice the difference. There were a few games that did kind of stutter a little bit, but it was not a deal breaker by any stretch. That's pretty impressive for this price category.
Yeah. Question for all of you guys. Are you... this is how I feel currently with the way that releases are happening. I know that we're on the cusp of like Note 20 and Pixel 5, I guess, Pixel 4a people are still talking about. But isn't it this segment in 2020 that has been the most exciting? Because
mm-hmm. yes.
like
yes,
S20 Ultra what? Like now I Who look cares? Back on Too when expensive. The S20 Ultra came yeah. out and I'm just like, what was the point of that phone when this is what we're all excited for now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying. I mean, I know I'm a broken record with this, but I've been saying for years now. It seems that the mid range is where it's at, and that's really where I want to see the innovation. And when are we going to see the waterfall effect? The flagship phones go to more affordable phones and to become more realistic, attainable phones that people can buy. So I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I understand why people are excited. Not everybody's excited about this phone. And of course, the availability is the big stinger if you live in the U.S. But OnePlus has said that they plan to release more Nord devices in that family. And they really seeded this device to a lot of U.S. journalists. I think that speaks mm-hmm. volumes as far as what their intentions are eventually. So I don't know how long you wait, but I think it's exciting. And I look forward to doing some sort of roundup at some point of like the exciting mid-rangers. You know, there's rumors. It's getting more and more likely that we're going to see the Pixel 4a in a matter of a week, maybe two, according to some rumors. You know, we've got the Motorola Edge. We've got we've got the phone we're going to talk about next. There's just a number of really interesting devices in this category. And I think, you know, people just have less money. So it makes a lot of sense for people to be more excited about these devices now.
And, you know, it's funny seeing how like the companies are trying, because it's easy to just create a flagship high-end phone where you just mash everything into there. That's the reason why design kind of went downward in trajectory the last couple of years, because it was all about the big camera humps on the back. Let's give you like 20 plus zoom when a squirrel runs by and that's it. And like, that's the only time I ever used it. But yeah, in the mid-range segment, it's like, it's interesting seeing the story of companies actually tuning it to match that price point. It's an interesting way of looking at a phone and to see how every company, like the one we're about to talk about, like actually prioritizes certain parts of a device over others. And I think what OnePlus has done over the last maybe 2 to 3 years has proven that they know what makes a phone good. So let's figure out how to make an affordable phone good. And it kind of brings them, everyone's saying like they're back to their roots. Kind of, sort of, not really. Like it's an affordable version of a OnePlus phone that we all know and love or hate, but mostly love, I feel like. And yeah, it's a good phone. And right now what we need are just good phones.
Yep. Well, so let's actually talk about the phone that we've been kind of referring to that we would talk about, the LG Velvet. We kind of have talked about it a little bit on the show. Kind of an interesting situation, but Flo, why don't you kind of take it from here?
This is so interesting that I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. That's what we're going to do today. I'm probably going to have to take this box out of frame for those watching the video feed. It's going to be a little, you know, but we're doing what we can. And during these times, a couple of quick specs about this LG Velvet. It's around the same price point for what we were just talking about $600, 5G ready device. It is something a lot of people have been anticipating, I think, because it's kind of a different, let me figure out how to open this box. It's kind of a different, it's a different direction for LG compared to what they've been sort of trying to do with the G series the last couple of years, having like a flagship go up against, you know, Samsung and all the rest. Why not just have a line of phones that seem reliable? I'm sorry. I'm trying to like, here we go. All right. I've got an unboxing. This worked a lot better in my mind, by the way, with this camera setup.
Well, in your defense, the box is enormous.
It is. It's an enormous box.
It's a large box.
For where I have the camera, which is not a lot of room. But so here we go. This is official unboxing of the LG Velvet. Literally opening the box, taking the phone out. If I have to actually get a spudger to do this. Stuck in there.
But Flo has stepped away from the desk.
No, I'm at the desk. I just went behind me to get a spudger.
Is that the technical term for that? I've never known that word.
Yeah. It's a spudger. That's what it's called.
Come on.
It's kind of a weird name, really.
This is ASMR for people who like to struggle with boxes.
This is frustrating ASMR. It is packed very tightly in Flo's defense. It was hard to get out.
We just saw the accessories. That's great.
Okay, folks. I'm going to have to take this off camera.
Note to self on unboxing.
I'm going to do this on the floor.
Man, this is, I mean, really, this is quality unboxing moment right here, everyone. I, for those of you listening on the audio, Flo is wrestling with a cardboard box trying to get the LG Velvet out of the box. Ooh, in a box. There it is.
There we go.
All right, so... So for our audio listeners, she has liberated the phone's box out of the shipping box, and it is a black box with the blue AT&T logo on it.
There's plenty of tape to keep it sealed closed, too, so just keep that in mind.
Right. Yeah, which is why
let it be known, audience, that these things are not easy, okay?
Yeah. No, they're not easy.
But Flo has the right tool for
ooh.
All right.
Nice. Here we go. Here's the phone. Oh, I got the silver variant. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's take it out of the plastic. Let's get some ASMR going to make up for all that struggling I just did.
Savor the peelies.
Yeah. It's the plastic on the phone. Let me take off the stickers on the back real quick.
I'll get some supplemental video as well.
Here we go. This is the phone.
Mine right here.
That AT&T logo.
No, I will say that when I opened mine, it was not broadcasted. It was a far less painful unboxing. But my wife saw it and commented and said, "Why the long phone?" Which I thought was really interesting because compared to my OnePlus 8, you can see the height difference on there. It gets pretty. This is a long phone. I believe the aspect ratio is 20, right? 29.
Close to there, yeah. I think it's 19.
21 then, maybe. Yeah, it's very tall.
It's 6.8 inch OLED with a 2460 by 1080 display.
Yeah, we'll put it up against the OnePlus Nord. Why? Because
yeah. we have it's a long with phone. The LG UX. Snapdragon 765G, 6 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. That rear camera which is up here. It's got this nice little like waterfall rain droplet effect, I believe is what they referred it to as. A triple lens, 48 megapixel wide with an aperture of f over 1.8, an 8 megapixel ultra wide with an aperture of f over 2.2, and a 5 megapixel depth sensor with an aperture of f over 2.4. So just as well equipped as those past LG phones. And I am kind of kicking myself for not thinking about it because it's on the other side of the room, but I had the V60 Ultra the V60 ThinQ that I meant to. Oh, there yep. we go.
I have it.
There we go. Jason's got it.
Don't worry about it. I got it.
So I guess it's about on par height wise next to the V60 ThinQ, which is fine. I mean, they are very tall phones, so that's going to have to be something that you have to consider if you want
it's
to
kind of. So it's narrower.
Yep.
It's definitely narrower than the Thank You.
It is so much thinner. Let's see if we can see it on the...
It's a strong design refresh, too. Like, just looking at the backs.
Oh, it really is. I was wondering, where was this design, you know, a couple of seasons ago? Because this is nice and svelte. It kind of reminds me of... an LG display, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a TV or a monitor, that situation. Just kind of the way that... they wrapped it up in here. Here's a little look at the bottom.
I really, really wish I had my unit. I lended it out to one of our friends, TK Bay, which is funny because at the time we didn't know that this phone, like it wasn't officially announced yet for the US. And then literally like a day after TK took my green unit, my green Korean unit off my hands, his silver unit arrived and he was like, sorry, bro.
You got a green unit?
Huh.
Yeah. It's a good look. The gradient one is obviously, I think, probably most people's favorite, but this silver actually looks pretty nice aside from the AT&T logo, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah, I mean, AT&T logo is right smack dab on the back of the device, right in the middle. Yeah,
4300 milliamp battery inside this thing, so I gotta tell you, I got some really great battery life off of the V60 ThinQ, so I don't know, whatever LG's doing for battery just for keeping on to that battery, I appreciate it. Any phone these days is more impressive to me in battery life than the Pixels. I'll say that much. We are going to, the three of us, Ron, Jason, Flo, that's the three of us. We're going to be looking at this phone as kind of a little three view review, so to speak.
It's going to be a group review. I've been playing with it since last week. Flo just opened it, as you saw. Jason's been playing with it. So we're going to spend another week with it, and then we're going to regroup here and do one of our first ever All About Android three-person review all at once.
Three-view.
We all have the same phone. Three-view. Three-view. There it is.
Three-view.
Yeah. Call it the three-view.
So stay tuned. Before we go, I wanted to just show you the rest of the contents just because this is an unboxing, right? So we have here a phone soap holder, which I guess you put your phone in and it desanitizes it. Very popular item in our COVID times. Right here.
I didn't get that.
Smart. Smart.
I didn't get that. I got that. It's probably in
there
somewhere.
You have an AC adapter.
Oh, that's a wonderful. Wow. Oh, for the soap
that's
thing.
That's for the phone
probably,
soap.
Right?
Yeah, that's for the phone soap.
We have a very
okay.
Yes, for the soap. You could probably use it for the phone too. It's USB-C.
Okay.
We have here a very Tommy Hilfiger looking case, which if I were going on a boat, this would look really nice with a pair of boat shoes.
Mm-hmm. Throwback.
And for those wondering, yes. It does work with the dual screen. So if you want to grab the dual screen, you can have that dual screen effect just the same way that you would with the V60 ThinQ. So LG is fully leaning into, you know, if you want that extra screen, you'll just pay, I think it's what, a little less than, I think it's less than $100 to just get that extra screen. So
okay.
I'm into it. Yeah. I'm into it. Okay. I haven't unboxed this because... The thing is, the Velvet will work just fine with the screen that came with the V60 ThinQ. So, looking forward to having another dual screen situation going on here.
Yeah.
So I will say, just a few thoughts. Without, I don't want to step on your three view for next week. I just want to give a few quick thoughts. That way, you guys are ready for it.
Prep us.
So the phone, I feel, is already, just from a general everyday standpoint, already pretty fantastic. It'll be up to you what the camera quality is like. But I personally think that what LG has done, when we were talking earlier about prioritizing certain parts of a mid-range phone, accessorizing is so, like, the quotient of it is so high with this phone. That dual screen really enhances the experience. It almost makes it, to be honest. The dual screen is amazing. There's also, and I didn't see, Flo, if you had it in your box, but there's also the Wacom pen. It'll take bamboo pens as a stylus. So if you are kind of into that, it kind of mimics what LG would make a Note experience like. But overall, yeah, I mean, the Velvet was the first phone that, at least for me, I used with the 765G. And like Jason was saying earlier, it's a great processor. And that was the first taste of it that I had. And the moment I actually realized that with the Velvet, I was like, okay, we're gonna be fine in 2020. Like these $500 phones are gonna be fine. We're good.
You guys, I think we're in for a reckoning going forward. Obviously the whole world is going to be going through a lot of change, but I really feel like the theme for this year, just because of, you know, not a lot of people are rolling in the same amount of dough they were 6 months ago. And I think the right manufacturers are going to really pay attention to that and just like go for it. And LG is no stranger to the mid-range low-end market. And I would love to see them kind of put some flagship prowess, you know, kind of inject it into that part of the market, because I just kind of feel like that's been forgotten about the last couple of years. It's been all like, oh, the best phones, the most expensive phones. But when you think about it, that's really not accessible to everybody. And isn't the whole point of, you know, the Android world that we're in, that the reason we like it is because of its accessibility, because it comes in all sorts of different tiers. So I'm really looking forward to whatever it is that the OnePlus Nord is supposed to like lead the way for. I'm looking forward to, you know, more pretty phones like the LG Velvet that just have a lot of sort of bang for your buck kind of thing. It's just, it's time. It's time.
Yeah.
And it's time.
There's a little charging connector in the dual screen case. I just want to caution you guys, don't lose it, because I did like one day in.
Yeah, you need that. You need that little adapter. It's magnets, and it kind of helps extend that USB-C connection.
Yeah, 100%. I was very disappointed in myself when that happened, and now just because now I got to take the phone out of the case to charge it, and then I can put it back in.
All right. Well, so stay tuned to next week when we go even deeper on the LG Velvet and all three of ours experience. And I'm looking forward to it. So we'll do that next week. Thank you, Flo, for that unforgettable unboxing that no one will ever forget. All right, let's take a break and thank our next sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Do you know how long well-qualified tech job candidates are on the market? 10 days. It's not hiring. It's more like a bidding war. IT Pro TV is an engaging and effective online IT professional training platform. They will help guide you into the IT career of your dreams with all the support you need to be successful. Take courses for networking skills or security skills, Linux, Apple, and more. You can earn certificates in A+, CCNP, and so many more, including CompTIA. IT Pro TV is the official video training partner for CompTIA and has 12 CompTIA on-demand courses. With over 5,800 hours of IT training, IT Pro TV is the best place to go for getting started or continuing your IT career. Sign up for a premium membership and let an expert guide you with setting goals and implementing an IT training program to help you reach them. IT Pro TV also has a learning coach for teams. Engage and grow the skill base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. Go to IT Pro TV and start to explore different career paths, job resources, virtual labs, and practice tests so you can see for yourself the amazing opportunities you have to learn from the best professionals in the industry. Want to learn a little more? Go to IT Pro TV and catch their podcast, Technado with Don Pezet, featuring industry guests and IT news recaps. And July is IT Pro TV's CompTIA month. They have CompTIA-themed webinars, a free CompTIA training weekend, a CompTIA-themed game show, CompTIA guests on their podcast, and more. So listen, get on board, go to IT Pro TV, and join a community of IT pros who are sharpening their skills the fun way. Go to itpro.tv/allaboutandroid and use code AAA30 to receive 30% off all consumer subscriptions. That's itpro.tv/allaboutandroid and use code AAA30, that's AAA30, for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thanks, IT Pro TV. We appreciate your support and your patience.
Thank you, fantastic. IT Pro TV. All right. So we're not going. Well, yeah, we could do hardware again. Yeah. It's okay. Because we are kind of staying in hardware, at least for the top of this next block. Mm. Because we have some other news that isn't hardware that we have in hand. Flo, what you got?
I'm hoping you guys will, you know, do a little background noise for me.
Oh, that's right. I was totally blanked. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, do you, what kind of music?
I try so hard every week to overproduce this show because I don't know why, but thank you all for dealing with me. Of course.
What if we just got the song completely wrong? Just all of a sudden, just like, we're no strangers to love.
That's the wrong song.
No rolling here. But we are talking about the Asus ROG Phone 3 for those who need absolute power.
You mean the ROG phone?
The ROG phone. Hey. You know, it's hard for me to call it the ROG phone because I know it's ROG, Republic of Gamers. And so, you know, I want to like, it's for the Republic of Gamers. Speaking of gamers, 6.59 inch OLED HDR display with a 144 hertz refresh, which is only what you will find on a gaming laptop if you pay extra for it in this day and age. But now Asus has put it into its latest Android smartphone. That's a lot of power. Snapdragon 867 Plus, 5G, of course, in this day and age, up to 16 gigs of DDR5 RAM, which is... wow, that's a lot. 512 gigs of storage, 6,000 milliamp battery life. We were just talking about how bigger batteries make for more fun, and I assume this is definitely where it's going to, you know, really be in play. Of course, that battery pack is about the same size as on the ROG Phone 2. Side-mounted USB-C, of course, so you can keep playing while you're charging. Ultrasonic air trigger touch sensors on the shoulders of the phone, you know, kind of make it feel like real handheld in your hands. And it's launching this September in the US, although there's no price, but the ROG Phone 2 was around $900 starting point. So I imagine it would be around the same there, you know, just considering the processor that's inside, considering the components. XDA also has some instructions on how to enable that hidden 160 hertz refresh rate, which was coming up in my Google feed the last couple of days. So just a lot of little excitements for people who are really into gaming, people who really want a phone that kind of matches that lifestyle they have at the desktop. I just think it's great to see that Asus has taken so much ownership of like its ROG, Republic of Gamers brand, that it's brought it to Android. So I know, Josh, you were a really big fan of the last phone, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Full disclosure, I never actually did do much content on the older phone. Hopefully that doesn't mess with my chances of getting the third one. But yeah, I'm loving the gaming segment in smartphones, because the way that I look at the gaming segment is the same way I look at it for computing and laptops. Where the trends go in gaming tend to influence the rest of the market. So if you don't mind, I actually have another phone here that's a gaming phone. This is the Red Magic 5G. And this is a fantastic phone for what it's trying to do. It also has air triggers. It has a big battery. In this case, it's 865, not 865 plus. But this is what I call the why the hell not phone, because there's a fan inside. And yes. What I love about the way that Red Magic implemented this fan, and I imagine it's going to be implemented in some way with the accessory fan that the ROG Phone 3 will have, it's more than just keeping the phone cool when you're gaming. It's also keeping the phone cool when you're charging or charging and gaming, which makes perfect sense. So why the hell not
put a fan in the video, phone? Or watching video, right?
That too. Yeah.
Video would also...
If you're worried about longevity or durability on the phone, and the phone gets really hot because in a way all this performance is made to make phones hot, that's when the fan comes into play. So maybe one of these days we're actually going to start seeing real cooling in phones rather than just the little like vapor chambers or anything like that. Gaming phones are where it gets weird. So in the stark contrast to all the practicality we've been talking about, we're just getting weird and I love it.
Didn't this happen to PCs though? Gaming PCs got really, really weird. And so it's kind of nice to see it come over to the Android side, just kind of show that like this quote unquote weirdness, it's not just a computer. I mean, it's a computer thing, but it's not just like a desktop sit in your chair kind of situation. It's something that really can be sort of a lifestyle aesthetic, so to speak.
Yeah, and we have an email coming up that kind of goes down the road towards these gaming phones not necessarily being just for gamers also, which is, you know, a good thing to consider. Like they're created with gaming in mind, but like you say, like it could just be a really great spec'd phone that's good for a number of things, also happens to be good for gaming. When you're talking about cooling the phone, the thing that comes to mind for me is the amount of times I've been driving, navigating with my phone in my car, and suddenly it overheats, and like sometimes it overheats so much it like powers off because it has to cool down. And I'm thinking, oh, actually, that would be really useful in that situation in the dead of summer, you know?
Also, we're all in very specific areas of the U.S., obviously, and I believe three of us right now are all in California, a place that is, we'll say, temperate, moderate, you know? Ever try taking just a general smartphone to a humid climate? It slows down incredibly fast. Like, it takes no effort at all to get that thing to overdo itself. And that's when I realized, like, a lot of the R&D that goes into testing, like, cooling and like, how well the phone can perform under heat, that's not for us. It's not for us. It's for everyone in, like, the Philippines, in India, and everywhere else. So I have to remind myself of that when I think of these things.
Yeah,
and with global really warming...
yep, too. Right? Only gonna get
worse.
Sorry,
but you know.
That's okay, though. When global warming eventually goes over the California coast, these phones are waterproof.
Exactly. Yes, eventually, when we all have to move uphill. Anyway.
For a certain amount of time. All right, we had the power, and the power was the ROG Phone 3. Now it's time for some apps, including an app that Ron seems to be pretty interested about. Let's jump into it.
I don't want to give off like a too much of a what's the word I'm looking for, a recommendation or advocation for this, but as we've been going through this past year and what, you know, the year of streaming wars with the launch of Disney Plus and HBO Max and et cetera, et cetera. I felt the need, you know, I kind of made fun of Peacock a couple of weeks ago before Peacock's launch. And the launch kind of came and went, and we didn't talk about it last week because we had Dave on from Google. And so it just didn't work, but I wanted to give Peacock its due because it did launch. And this is the streaming app from NBC Universal, and it is now available for Android. And I will give it some credit. It actually surprised me with a couple of things. First and foremost, though, it's available on Android and Chromecast and Android TV. I think it launched on like July 15th or like around there. So, a week ago. It's a totally free streaming app. It's got a free basic tier with ads in it. So it is ad supported. And then you can upgrade to $4.99 to get a larger library, larger movie selection, and some ads. And then you can unlock at the $9.99 level to get even more more content and no ads. And the battery exhausted. So there you go.
Sorry about that. My overhead rate.
Yeah, thank you for the B-roll there, Joshua. That's great. So for $9.99, you unlock all the content and no ads, which is pretty cool. But if you are an Android user, Peacock teamed up, NBC Universal teamed up with Google, and Android users, if you download the app, you get a free 3-month trial to the app, which is fantastic. Just remember to set your calendar date for 3 months in advance for when you activate, so you remember to go cancel it if you need to. But the reason why I want to talk about it was I was actually impressed with their approach with this, because we've seen Disney Plus come out and we've seen HBO Max come out, and they both really kind of mirror the Netflix model of app approach in terms of there's a library and they're bubbling up stuff on the home screen and you can do searches and there are recommendations based off what you watch, but it's pretty much a library of access that you reach it, that you search and consume and then move on to the next thing. We've seen other streaming services, not at major media conglomerates like Pluto TV, that are offering something called linear programming, where it's not on demand, or the majority of the content is not on demand. In fact, that it is a series of channels that you can scroll, and you know, they've got content from different sources, and there's a channel for cute dogs, and there's a channel for, you know, for Korean game shows or whatever you might want it to be. I was fascinated by the fact that Peacock is the first major media streaming app to embrace both. When you open up the app, the first screen you see is a trending screen, which is whatever. It just shows videos that are trending. But you can go either to the left or to the right. And if you go to the right, that's the browse, kind of the browse the library feature, where you can drill down by TV shows, movies, kids. You know, you can dive into all the Jurassic Park movies. You can go into Saturday Night Live, etc. But if you go to the left – to the channel section, they have created a bunch of linear streaming channels. There's a NBC News channel. There's a Saturday Night Live channel. There's a whole channel dedicated to The Office. There's a whole channel dedicated to Sky News. There's a whole channel dedicated to classic unsolved mysteries. There's a whole channel dedicated to Painting with Bob Ross.
That's dope.
I think this is really interesting because of all of the major, you know, of all of the streaming services that we're seeing, with the exception of YouTube TV and Pluto TV that are doing kind of live, you know, kind of linear TV. This is the first. Hulu doesn't do this. HBO doesn't do this. Netflix doesn't do this. Disney doesn't do this. Amazon Prime doesn't do it. The idea of a channel-based thing, and it's really kind of interesting. I don't know how you guys consume TV, but oftentimes I'm overwhelmed by the search and find library approach because there's so much in it. I don't know what I want to watch. I don't know what it is. But if you've got a bunch of channels that you can quote-unquote flip through and be like, oh, I love this episode of The Office, and you just start watching it. And yes, I recognize that it's kind of we're going back to what we started with linear TV. But somebody at NBC Universal, I will give them credit for seeing that trend emerging with stuff like Pluto TV and saying we should put this in our app to differentiate us from the other ones in the marketplace. So bravo, Peacock. I'm impressed. I don't know that I'm watching anything on it. I'm not really in the Chicago Fire, but I have it. And there is a channel dedicated – there is a linear channel dedicated to cute animals, and my kids love video dogs of videos, and it's a lot better to just put that channel on and walk away than have to go onto YouTube and find a 30-minute video and hope the next one is the same one and that sort of thing. I can just leave that channel on and let it run. So, yeah.
So that's true.
Did Peacock just like pipe in whatever NBC had access to, because a lot of those free channels you mentioned, they're already streaming on like Pluto.
Yeah, no, I think they've taken all the stuff that's in their library, and they probably were already, knowing what I know about how this stuff works behind the scenes, they created the feeds that feed the linear channels and are giving them to Pluto already. So they just routed them to within their app, which makes sense because they already did the work. But just the acceptance of the approach of a linear channel system, I was surprised to see. I mean, like, I get that they licensed that content for Pluto, but I could easily see that going, oh, well, who knows? You know, we'll just put it out there and see how it does. Clearly, they got some data showing that people consume it that way. So,
yeah.
I mean, you got this right here. You just say by the bell already.
It is.
There it is.
There you go. That's all you ever need.
There's actually quite a few. I'm looking through this. Today was my first day actually looking through it. There's actually quite a few things here that I would watch. And it kind of makes sense to me that a lot of this content would be made free on a platform like this, because it's a network television. It's network television. So it is technically free already, right? Downton Abbey. Okay. Psych.
Yeah.
They made it. There's even a Psych movie part two here made specifically for Peacock. So it looks like they're making original content as well for Peacock.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, they've got, again, like all these streaming services, they launch with not enough original new content. They've got like five shows. They've got they're doing a Brave New World adaptation, a new season of Psych, some David Schwimmer show, but they have a handful of stuff and nothing in it am I interested in. Although some people seem to like this Brave New World thing. But for this, it's the library content. If you're into Saturday Night Live, if you're into The Office, if you're into 30 Rock, if you're into all that, you know, Parks and Rec, all that stuff, it's all there. But you know, it's also, they've also got the Bob Ross library, which, you know, a lot of people love that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Put that in the background.
Yeah.
There's some comfort to knowing that there's just a channel playing things that you can just tune into and be like, cool, I didn't really have to decide anything. You've decided for me. So that's probably part of what that functionality is all about. Yep. So this week is my turn to do the app spotlight. We kind of took last week off because of the interview, which was amazing. But anyway, so I'm going to show off an app. I've been in a conversation, kind of an ongoing conversation with the developers of an app called ConverStory. You can find this on the Play Store. Go to the Play Store, and while you do that, I'm going to switch over to my camera so I can talk about this. ConverStory is an app that does some really interesting things with voice-to-text recognition and automatic searching. So I have ConverStory running on my Pixel right now. It kind of looks like a Chromecast setting screen, and it does work with Chromecast, so that's one of the features. This is an app created by a team up in Vancouver, Canada, and basically the app listens to the words that you speak when it's running. I don't have it running yet, or in active listening mode. And then it pulls up a picture slideshow to match, hopefully in real time. In my experience, it's not quite real time because it has to hear your words and then, you know, do the search, grab that image, and then make it appear. And it includes captions while you're going along. It can isolate to word searches, or you can broaden it out to phrase searches. So you can kind of, you know, tweak some of the settings. I can go in there real quick and kind of show you. You can have it, you know, continuously listening so that it's kind of pinging more frequently or less frequently. You can set the time, so the listen duration. The rotation duration is how long it stays on a particular image. I just thought it was an interesting approach, an interesting idea, an app that I hadn't seen before. So I thought we'd test it out and we'll see what we come up with. And I'm sure the developer of this app is going to be watching and crossing their fingers to make sure that it does exactly what they expect it to do. So I'm going to go ahead and hit play. I'm going to tell you a little story here. Let's see here. There we go. Once upon a time, there lived three beings, one named the Big Lebowski. And I'm going to pause every once in a while. One named Taylor Swift. Come on, you can do it. There we go. And one named the Kraken, who flew back to Earth on the Millennium Falcon. And now, as they began living on planet Earth, they each built three houses. One house was made out of hay. Another house was built out of wood. And the last house was built out of brick. Come on. Come on, you can do it. Come on. There we, okay, that's good. That's good. The three beings thought they were all right until one day a big bad wolf walked into town. This wolf looked mean. This wolf looked hungry. And unbeknownst to the beings, this wolf, one day, had lungs of steel. All right, so I'm going to stop there. You'll never know how that story ends. Sorry.
Oh, man, I'm going to be up all night thinking about it.
But anyways, I just think it's an interesting app.
Miss Wolf.
Miss Wolf. That's that story. See, and as I talk, it's just going to come up with pictures. I could do the whole show like this, and you'd probably be amused at what would appear from time to time based on what I'm talking about. It really works well or better when you're talking about proper nouns and that sort of stuff. So I tried to throw a bunch in there in the demonstration. But I just thought it was kind of a unique app and worth checking out their hard work. It's called Converse Story, like conversation, but with story, all one word. And yeah, they're pretty proud of it. And I love showing off the hard work of app developers on this show, especially when it's kind of unique. Did I say Stranger Things? I don't know.
No, it's anyways, stuff on there.
It's called Converse Story.
Slipknot.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. So anyways, I'm going to switch back over to my camera now. So things might go black, and if they do, I'm sorry. There we go. All right, and we're back. So yeah, there you go. I should have added cool chainsaw hands in there, Burke. I'm sorry. That would have been appropriate. All right, we've got some emails, AAA@twit.tv, or you can leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA, if you like. Flo, you got the first email.
All right, this one comes from Ben. Ben wrote in, I wanted to hear what computer OS the team uses, whether it be Windows, Mac OS, or even Chrome OS. I think it would be interesting to hear because Windows does have integration with Android via the My Phone that helps to display notifications and respond to them as well. This integration is even better than Chrome OS itself, which is sad. I also want to know what your thoughts are on the Lenovo Chromebook Duet and Chrome OS tablets in general as alternatives to Android tablets. Ben. Well, Ben,
This is a controversial question. The answers to this get people angry.
They do. This is true. I am a little bit on the shared side between Chrome OS and Windows 10. I'm coming to you from a Windows 10 laptop, but I also have a couple of Chromebooks around here that I like to use, which is why Chrome is kind of my platform. It's sort of what I refer to it as. It's the platform where all my work exists, and then whatever desktop OS I'm on, that's what I'm using at the time. I was going to say, just pull in a little plug for myself, and I apologize I didn't link this, but I actually wrote an article for review.com a couple of months back, I think at the beginning of this year, about Android apps that work with Windows. So if anybody's interested, you can Google that and find it. But other than that, I guess, Ron, Jason, Josh, what are you guys using these days?
Start with me. I'm the villain in this story because I'm still on a Mac and I'm currently on Mac OS right now. I previously was a Windows person, but that was now almost 15 years ago. And like I said before, I want to go Chrome OS. I would want to make the jump, but too much of my daily stuff I need to do, I'm just comfortable on Mac OS. I'm doing Photoshop. I'm doing Premiere. I'm doing, you know, like productivity stuff that I just don't trust Chrome OS to actually be able to replicate, and having the file system and local hard drive and all that sort of stuff. That said, there are times I want to throw my MacBook Pro out the window. So I get the frustration and I think about it sometimes, but I don't think it's quite there yet. So that's my opinion.
Joshua, what about you?
I'll use self-proclaimed avid gamer. I'm a Windows guy. A part of me would want to go to Linux. I did dabble in like Ubuntu and Mint back in the day, especially since I know that
as
video
we
editor,
all did, Joshua. We all did in college.
Indeed, right? Exactly. That's exactly right. Especially since I know that my video editor of choice, DaVinci Resolve, actually works on Linux. So part of me wants to try it out. But yeah, I can't say no to, I can't say goodbye to any of the games that I just really like playing. Also, speaking of the your phone or my phone functionality and whatnot, whatever that rumored AirDrop alternative for Android, that can't come soon enough. Like that
nearby
that,
share, near share, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, nearby sharing. Yeah.
We need that like now.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I have to say, it's pretty awesome in use. I actually just fired up my S20 Ultra. I did kind of like a deep dive into nearby sharing because I got into the beta on Hands on Android a few weeks ago. I fired up my Galaxy S20 and I realized that when it was running, like it gave me a notification to say, oh, hey, the device that you've made a connection with is online. Would you like to share with them? So it just kind of gave me a sense of like when you use it and you say, yes, all these particular people and devices, their devices are okay, you'll be notified of it. So that was a new feature that I hadn't seen before. So yeah, it's really cool and it's really fast. It's nice. As far as what I use, I mean, I use MacBook Pro as my computer right now in the quarantine life. I mean, I'm using this thing, yes, for producing shows, but I'm also using it to show off on shows for demonstrations and things like that. If I wasn't, maybe I'd lean a little bit more into my Chromebooks. I'll be completely honest. My kids are using the Chromebooks right now because they're doing at-home education and we needed computers for them to use. So I'm like, well, the Chromebook is perfect for you. So, and it has been.
Oh,
so
nice.
They're using the Chrome OS Chromebooks and I'm using the MacBook Pro. And I'm fine with that. I do like Chrome OS though, but I also like the MacBook. So I'm good either
way.
That
actually makes sense. Like the online learning, is a lot of that is in a browser, right? So that does make sense for Chrome OS.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh. I mean, almost all their stuff is in a browser. There's hardly anything that isn't. Yeah. And I mean, many schools, at least here in the U.S., are giving Chromebooks to the students anyways, if they're not giving like an iPad or whatever. So, it's perfectly appropriate. It allows me to use the family link to kind of like craft what they're allowed to do on that computer and what they're not, so that it can kind of keep them focused and everything. So it works really
That's
well.
Nice and easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely comes in handy.
I got into a lot of trouble having a computer on my own when I was younger, so.
Yep. Thank you, Ben, for writing in. Also, Mark Heil wrote in to say, I'm using the Android 11 beta. I like the new navigation bar that lets the AI place the apps. This is app suggestions is the feature. He says, however, I was looking for a way to blacklist specific apps from showing up there and couldn't find any. There are a number of types of apps that you may not want visible on the home screen for various reasons, and it would be nice to be able to do so. Can we lobby Google to include something like that in the final release, or maybe a third-party utility will be able to add that function? And I'm happy to report, Mark, that this setting actually already exists. You have to go into your Pixel Launcher settings in order to find it. But if you go into your system settings and just type in a search, and I included a little video file that'll show it, Burke, if you want to play that. If you go into your settings and then you type in a search for suggestions, you'll find it links right to the Pixel Launcher. It has the suggestions settings. You just tap into that, and there you will find a blacklist area. And so you just tap into that. You tell it all the apps that you do not want to appear in those spots. It also prevents those apps from appearing in the dynamic apps pocket or whatever you want to call it in your app tray, in your app list that you open up. The very top row is like kind of the same thing. So it'll prevent them from appearing there as well. So it already exists. Go nuts. Have fun. There you go. That was easy. Love it when it's easy like that.
And I have the honor now of sharing with you the email of the week.
I got Bert the power.
Bert just sometimes wants the long drum roll. He doesn't want to give us the Windows 95 sound.
So
Chris writes in, Chris, a listener from podcast number one, which I believe is our first episode. Chris writes in, he's the email of the week. No drum roll. Oh, well. There you go. Okay, right. I've been the owner of a ROG Phone 2 since about a month after it could be ordered. I bought it thinking that it's the highest end Android I could get, especially for the price. I'm not a phone gamer and maybe have a few games on it that I almost never play. What's great about it? The biggest battery available, and in this crappy world of glued-in batteries, that's everything to me. My last phone was the LG V20, bought because it was the last flagship with a removable battery. When you think the phone will last 2 to 3 years, this is super important. Even if initial reviews show decent battery life, after a year, it will start dropping like crazy. Beyond that, it's got the fastest processor, fast screen, great cameras. No zoom camera, but seriously, how often is that used? Headphone jack, 2 USB-C ports, 12 gig of RAM, 512 storage for $900. No holes in the screen and great forward-firing speakers. It does have a few negatives, like no Wi-Fi calling. The screen max brightness could be brighter, and I guess no zoom lens, but no glass back to break and pretty basic Android skin. I've even had a few iPhone people get blown away by the color-changing light on the back. A cooler feature, in my opinion, than, say, a shiny back that gets covered with a case anyway. Ron need not care, LOL. So thank you, Chris, for responding to my call for owners of the ROG phone. I think it's fascinating that a ROG phone owner came to the forefront and it's not a gamer. And I like the way Chris lives his life. He wants fast processors. He wants lots of storage. He wants fast, high end. I'm sure he lives a wonderful life with that level of quality with his phone and with everything else. So, Chris, bravo to you. Email of the week, sir. So,
thank you, Chris.
That was such a beautifully succinct review of that phone too. Like that was really nice. And also on the topic of phones, like the gaming phones sort of making trends. I mean, yeah, if we're looking at phones because of the way that they look, why not put some LEDs on the back of phones, man? I mean, come on. Like, makes perfect sense.
Well, it doesn't cut down on other aspects of the phone. That's always my concern when I see an LED on the back of the phone. Like, okay, that looks neat, but does that mean I'm going to see a significant drop in my longevity of the device on a day-to-day basis? I suppose you can probably deactivate it in settings, but then why is it there if I'm just going to do that? But
also an underrated feature of those back LEDs are also a very underrated feature for those is notification lights. We haven't had proper notification lights in a long time. So if your phone's upside down and it glows a certain color, you know what you got. So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always liked the notification lights, but now we have the ambient display, which kind of takes the place of the notification lights. So
that's fair.
We have that as well. All right. Well, we've reached the end of this episode of All About Android. And Joshua, as always, it's amazing to get you on the show. Thank you so much for carving out time to hang out with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
No. Thank you, guys. If you remember from our email, I was like, you know what? I can be on any show after tax day. That was my only criteria.
By the way, I noticed. Okay, so I know. Like I've known this for a while, but you always do this, and I know it's because it's the J and the V for Joshua Vergara. But I just want you to know it's also JH for Jason Hill. All right.
So, oh, there we go. You know,
take that what you will. So youtube.com/Joshua Vergara, where do you want people to kind of follow all the stuff you're doing?
Well, that would be the main place. If you want to follow me on social media, you can also find me on Instagram and Twitter under the handle @JVTechT, because I'm JV. I love tech and I love to drink me some tea. If you don't mind me plugging another podcast, I do want to just let everybody know that Jaime Rivera of Pagana and myself, I host the Pagana Weekly podcast. I just want to let everybody know that we did a wonderful interview with a representative from Samsung, one of the people who actually is on stage during Unpacks most of the time, Hassan Anjum. So we were really proud of that interview, so I'm taking the opportunity to plug it wherever I can. So as far as the Pocket Now stuff is concerned, definitely check that out.
Nice. And Pocket Now podcast, where can people find that? Well, I mean, it just in any podcatcher of choice, right?
Yes. Pocket Now Weekly would be the term.
Pocket Now Weekly. And is it the last episode that was the interview?
Yes. The most recent one this past Thursday was when it came out. So yes, the most recent episode is the one.
Okay, awesome. Everybody check for that. Thank you, Joshua. We appreciate it. And thanks for hanging out with us. Flo, what about you?
What about me?
What about
Well, I'm currently just buried under a pile of mechanical keyboards. So until I get through that, you can go to florenceion.com to find basically my resume, what I've worked on, where my recent work is. If you click on recent work at florenceion.com, it will actually take you to some of my latest work that I've worked on, including an Android 11 walkthrough over at Lifehacker. So definitely check that out if you have a chance. You can also go to flowrights.tech, and that is a URL that I created with Hover, advertiser here in the Twit Network. And if you go there, it'll give you links to everywhere you can find me on the web, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that and more. So check it out.
Check it out. Thank you, Flo. And Ron, what about you? Any big news?
Yeah, no real big news. We for those of you who are tracking Scorbit, my pinball startup, we are still plugging along. Not only is hardware hard, but software is hard. But we're closer than ever, and I'm hoping in August we'll be actually launching. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, as Joshua has mentioned, we're here in staying at home often. And so I have gotten behind the mic a lot, as you all know, and I've joined my buddies over at iFanboy. And this month, we talked about Midnight Run, a classic comedy movie that I had never seen before, starring Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. And so we chatted about Midnight Run, what I thought of it. Did I get over my hatred of Charles Grodin? Tune in, listen to find out.
You hate Charles Grodin.
Yes. I'll give you one guess, and I think Jason will be able to guess at why I hate Charles Grodin.
Beethoven? Is it Beethoven?
No. The Great Muppet Caper.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
He's the villain.
He's the villain in The Great Muppet Caper, and I watched that in 1981, and it stuck with me. So,
he's always bad as a result.
Yep, always bad.
Love it. Thank you, Ron. Also, big thanks to Burke at the studio, pushing the buttons, making us sound and look good. Also, Victor working behind the scenes to bring you the podcast after the fact and to follow along so that we can promote it. And he does so much work behind the scenes. So we appreciate both your work so very much. You can find Hands on Android at twit.tv/HOA. Last week's episode was taking a look at Root and what it does for you for backup. Just makes me realize how long it's been since I've spent any time rooting devices and stuff. But anyways, you can take a look at that. And then coming up this Thursday, I take a look at ways to get around Android's ability to block you from taking screenshots of certain apps and recording video of certain apps. There are some methods that you can try. They're not perfect, but I kind of explore some of those. And so that's twit.tv/HOA. That happens this Thursday. Don't forget, you can help us with a whole number of things by visiting twit.tv/store. Help us keep the lights on, among other things. But we've got all about Android designs there that are pretty awesome. So if you want to get an all about Android shirt. Yeah, I know. Shirts for men, shirts for women. I mean, these designs are awesome. So check them out, twit.tv/store. And that is it for this week. We publish this show each and every Tuesday evening. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA. And I think that's about it. We're just going to wrap it up right now. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, host at Twit TV. Got a question for you. Have you gotten tired of how bad your photos are looking every time you post them to Instagram? Better yet, have you gotten yourself a new camera and you can't quite figure out why the images just don't look that good? Well, I have a solution for you. It's my show, Hands On Photography. Each and every Thursday, I sit down and share different tips and tricks that are going to help make you a better photographer and a better post processor. So subscribe today at twit.tv/hop to learn more.